I'd like to begin by asking just how you became interested in this particular part of Kentucky history.
Well, actually, it came from sort of very organically. I was born and raised in Lexington, and growing up in Kentucky back in the 1980s, I couldn't help but notice that the public commemoration of the Civil War seemed to differ from the version of Kentucky history that I learned, say, in fourth grade, you know, where you learned that, of course, Kentucky remained loyal to the Union, and more Kentucky men fought for the Union than fought for the Confederacy. But when I looked around me as a kid, there were all of these Confederate monuments everywhere and hardly a Union monument to be seen. And as I got a little older and started to pursue history, I started reading and realized this sort of change in historical memory of the Civil War, that sort of where Kentuckians by and large ignored their Unionist past and sort of embraced this Confederate identity, was something that actually intrigued and perplexed a lot of other historians as well. So I thought, well, this is a perfect thing to research for a dissertation, and that's sort of how I got started on it.
Well, as you point out, back during the war, Kentucky was a majority Unionist state, a Whig state. What happened that changed the way it saw itself?
A lot of it has to do with the reasons that white Kentuckians were loyal to the Union. And it's hard for us, I think, in hindsight, when we now know very well that the war turned into a war of emancipation, where freeing slaves became a goal of the federal government. It's hard for us to look back and realize that in 1860, most Kentuckians certainly didn't want that as an outcome, and they certainly didn't think that that was necessarily going to be what happened. They were actually loyal to the Union because they realized that since the Constitution had been written, the federal government had been the best protector of slavery. And even though slavery was certainly increasingly under attack, a lot of Kentuckians were much more moderate than their southern counterparts in the Deep South who seceded, because they really were sort of holding on to that hope very dearly that the federal government would continue to protect slavery. So when we sort of accept that as a starting point, you can see during the war, especially if you look in letters and diaries of Unionists, this sort of sense of outrage as the war goes on in 1862, 63, and 64, that this is turning into a war of emancipation, and they really start to lose their faith in the federal government. They become very angry. At the same time, the war becomes about emancipation. When people start to celebrate it and celebrate that cause after the war, that's what they look back to. And so it's not really surprising that Unionists in Kentucky, who had never really wanted emancipation to begin with, rejected it after the war as well. And that's what I found, is that when the war memory became about celebrating emancipation, there really wasn't any way for these conservative Unionist Kentuckians to sort of latch on to that memory and celebrate it. On the other hand, African-American Kentuckians very much embraced that version of the past, and they celebrated Union victory to a great extent.
Well, as you correctly point out, it seems as though there are Confederate monuments in every county, sometimes multiple monuments in counties.
Yes.
But as far as I know, there's only one memorial for Union soldiers. Now, how did that happen, and why did these thousands of Union veterans let that go by?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there actually are a few more Union monuments, but you're correct. They're overwhelmingly Confederate. And several of the sort of more the monuments that are at least recall the sort of Union allegiance that Kentucky had are more recent even. But if we look at the Union monuments, many of them were put up to honor conservative people. For example, there's a monument to Frank Wolford, who was a prominent Union commander from Kentucky. And after Lincoln started to enlist African American troops, Wolford berated the president very publicly for a couple of hours at a public function in Kentucky, and of course got dishonorably discharged from the army. But he got a monument. Another example is that there is a monument in Frankfort in the cemetery that was erected in the early 20th century by an African American chapter of Ladies Auxiliary to the GAR, the Grand Army of the Republic, and that was dedicated to African American troops. But you don't see so many African American monuments because these monuments were really expensive, and it took a lot of public support to erect them. And so, because Unionists by and large were not particularly passionate about celebrating the Union cause once it became so associated with emancipation, they didn't really have a compelling cause to, you know, to get out there and raise money from the public. Whereas there were lots and lots of Confederate monuments that took a lot of money, and the public by and large supported those. Even people who might have fought for the Union would oftentimes patronize events or bazaars or other kinds of fundraisers that were going towards building these Confederate monuments. So a lot of it really has to do with the motivations for people to put up these monuments and the kind of public support that they could garner to raise the money to do so.
Hmm. Well, early on, you mentioned a naturally deeply conservative state, and then this distrust of what the federal government was doing during the Reconstruction period. And you say those words in that closely together, and that sounds eerily familiar to what we have today.
Yes.
Is there a connection? Is there a provenance there?
Well, you know, historians are always a little reluctant to draw, you know, these sort of straight lines from past to present. And I don't think we can sort of say that there's been a sort of steady, you know, if we look at Kentucky, a sort of steady disdain for the federal government. I mean, that certainly has changed in different times in different places, especially if you think about during the New Deal when, you know, Kentuckians were pretty happy to be supported in large part by the federal government. And certain parts of Kentucky are still, you know, if we look at Appalachia and other typically poorer areas of the state. But I know what you're getting at here, and I think there's definitely a connection. You know, I think we can see in this allegiance to, for example, the Tea Party, this anti-government sentiment. If we flip it, we can see how this sort of pro-Confederate memory can bolster current day anti-government sentiments. For example, a few years ago, the governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, declared a statewide day of remembering the Confederacy, and it seemed a little odd, you know, to do that in the early 21st century, right, when we're so far removed from the Civil War. But if you look at the language he used to justify it, it was this language of sort of anti-government, and clearly he was appealing more toward to this anti-government political sentiment than he was actually really trying to remember the Civil War and the men who fought for the South. So I do think that rhetoric certainly goes hand in hand and you know, sort of conveniently combined at times. But as far as drawing a straight line, this sort of continuous line, that's a little harder to do.
I see. So it's more of an artifact of that period than a direct consequence.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And a strong historical association that can be brought in and used over and over again and, you know, whenever it's fitting, I think.
Well, let me ask about the main focus of your presentation at the upcoming Hammock Banquet.
Yes. Well, I'm going to talk about broadly Civil War memory in Kentucky, but I'm going to talk about how that has changed over time and focus on, in particular, how Kentuckians have viewed Abraham Lincoln during the last 150 years and how that's changed. Of course, we all know Lincoln is a native Kentuckian, but less than 2% of white Kentuckians voted for Lincoln in 1860, so he wasn't particularly popular then, and he became less and less popular during the Civil War. But as anybody who's lived in Kentucky in the last 10 years knows, the state went all out for the 16th president on his 200th anniversary and that multi-year celebration. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how the evolution of that memory happened and how Kentucky came to re-embrace Abraham Lincoln recently.
Dr. Ann Marshall is a professor of history at Mississippi State University and the author of Creating a Confederate Kentucky. She's also the keynote speaker at this year's Murray State Department of History James Hammock Scholarship Banquet. Dr. Marshall, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much for having me.